Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record Program 1014. Update on fascism in Ukraine. This is being recorded on July 10th of the year 2018. For several years, we have been covering the return to power of a number of what I have termed OUNB successor organizations in Ukraine. The OUNB was the primary Nazi collaborationist organization in Ukraine. It then, after the war, not only survived, but as a member of the as the dominant member of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, originally the Committee of Subjugated Nations, formed by Adolf Hitler in 1943. It was very closely connected to the Galen spy organization and through that to elements of CIA and to the Republican Party. Eventually, following the Maidan coup of February 2014, OUNB successor organizations like Svoboda and the Pravi sector and their military and paramilitary organizations like C-14 or Combat 14, the UNA, UNSO, and the Azov Battalion assumed a primary position in Ukrainian national security affairs. In For the Record Program 779, I went into the dominant role of these organizations in the initial provisional government set up in Ukraine following the overthrow and flight of Viktor Yanukovych. And they, that is to say, the OUNB successor fascist organizations, have remained in a controlling position vis-a-vis the Ukrainian police and national security establishments. What we're going to be looking at in this program are some of the manifestations of that and some of the people who may very well have had a dominant role in helping to set the narrative in the U.S. about what is going on in Ukraine. In that regard, we are going to begin by taking a look at the role of Victoria Nuland, who was an assistant secretary of state under Obama, and actually I believe was a holdover from the Bush administration. Put a question mark by that. But in any event, she was a primary functionary in the realization of the Maidan coup and was altogether chummy with some of the fascists of the OUNB successor organizations, such as Oleg Tyanobut of Svoboda. In For the Record 943 and in For the Record 981, we look at the primary role of Ukraine and OUNB sympathetic organizations, people affiliated with the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the top OUNB front organization in the U.S., and the Ukrainian Congress, an international organization, as well as the Atlantic Council, with helping to craft the Russians hacked the DNC and related charges such as the Russians hacked Mr. Podesta's email and other things as well. There was a revealing piece of information in an otherwise more or less standard, Russian boogeyman story that appeared on in Yahoo News of June 20th of 2018. It's by Michael Isikoff, formerly of Newsweek, someone who did some pretty good work on the September 11th / Alpaca connections and has just loomed way to the right and is making, frankly, a fool out of himself in connection with the Russiagate PSYOP. Nonetheless, there is the old expression, even a blind pig finds an acorn once in a while. And in this particular article from Yahoo News of June 20th of 2018, Obama cyber chief confirms stand-down order against Russian cyber attacks in the summer of 2016, we find the following. That conclusion was reinforced Wednesday by another witness, Victoria Nuland, who served as Assistant Secretary of State for Europe during the Obama administration. She told the panel that she had been briefed as early as December of 2015 about the hacking of the Democratic National Committee, long before senior DNC officials were aware of it, and that the intrusion had all the hallmarks of a Russian operation. The point being here that Victoria Nuland, a primary operative in the realization of the Maidan coup, someone very chummy with people like Andriy Parubiy, Oleh Tiyanovich, and others, was informed of the alleged hacks of the DNC well before senior DNC officials were aware of it. That places her in a position, potentially, to have helped to mobilize people like Alexandra Chalupa, organizations like CrowdStrike, and even some of the Ukrainian fascist organizations like the Prop or Not team, to generate the Russia did it narrative on Donald Trump's victory, something which is altogether far-fetched if one could accept that the FBI was a Russian organization, a Russian fifth column organization, and that James Comey was a Russian agent. Really, that last is no more far-fetched, in essence, than the notion that Paul Manafort, an obvious right-wing U.S. operative and probable U.S. intelligence officer, was a Russian agent. If one could accept that the FBI and Paul and James Comey were Russian agents, then perhaps the Russia did it notion of Trump coming to power would not seem so far-fetched. But as it is frankly obviously ridiculous. This, I think, is more than a little significant with Victoria Nuland, again, one of the prime movers in the Euromaidan coup, having been informed about the alleged Russian hacking of the DNC well in advance of senior DNC officials. I think it is altogether reasonable to ask if perhaps Nuland was involved with helping to mobilize some of the elements that we looked at in For the Record Program 943 and 981 in connection with the Russiagate PSYOP. In For the Record 1004, we took a look at attacks by some of the OUMB successor organizations, militias on, among other things, Romani camps in Ukraine. We also looked in that same context at the National Druzhina, Druzhyna militia, and the Combat 14 militia and their roles as basically functioning as policemen in Kiev and 21 other major Ukrainian cities. There are regular police, but these militias have been given the opportunity to basically pretty much operate with a free hand. In For the Record 1004, we noted that the National Director of Police Affairs in Ukraine is a fellow named Vadim Troyan, who was the commanding officer of the Azov Battalion, one of the openly Nazi formations in Ukraine. The attacks both by Combat 14 and by the National Druzhyna have continued. The latest is reported in the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, or on the Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty website of June 8th of 2018 by Christopher Miller. With axes and hammers, far-right vigilantes destroy another Romani camp in Kiev. Swinging axes and sledgehammers as a camera roll, members of the far-right Azov National Druzhyna militia destroyed a Romani camp here in Kiev's Holosinski Park on June 7th. The attack marks the second such incident by far-right vigilantes in Kiev and the fourth in Ukraine in the past 6 weeks. The National Duzhina, a militia formed in January by veterans of the far-right Azov Battalion, had visited the camp earlier in the day and spoken threateningly with a woman who lived there, an encounter that was filmed by the group and published on its Facebook page. The militia also issued an ultimatum in the Facebook post for the Roma to clear out within 24 hours or be forced out by a, quote, mob, unquote. When the police don't act, the National Duzhina takes control of the situation, the militia wrote. But the militia did not wait. Hours later, what appeared to be around two dozen nationalists returned to destroy the camp and harass the few Romani women still there. The attack was broadcast live on the militia's Facebook page, skipping down. With police looking on, more than a dozen of the vigilantes posed together to a cry of, "Glory to the nation, death to enemies," unquote. Kiev police spokeswoman Oksana Bishik told Romansky TV the Romani group had already fled the camp when militia members arrived, which the video clearly contradicts. She added that no one had been injured and nobody had been detained. The Holetsky camp attack follows three others within the past month and a half. In May, right-wing thugs attacked a Romani camp in western Ternopil. That followed the burning of one in the nearby village of Rudne, R-U-D-M-E, in the Lvov region. In April, members of a far-right extremist group, Combat 14, chased a group of Roma from their camps at the Zahora Nature Reserve in Kiev. Masked attackers hurled stones and sprayed gas as they chased terrified Romani men, women, and children from the makeshift settlement. Police did nothing until a video of the attack went viral online, forcing them to open an investigation, the results of which remain unclear. Again, bear in mind that both the Duzhina militia, formed by the Azov people, and Combat 14, basically the paramilitary arm of the Svoboda political party, headed up by Victoria Nuland's associate, Oleh Tiahnybuk, these have police powers in 21 Ukrainian cities, including the capital of Kiev. Bear in mind also that the spokesperson for the Azov Battalion is Roman Zvarich, who was the personal secretary in the early 1980s to Yaroslav Stetsko, the head of Ukraine's World War II collaborationist government, or Nazi collaborationist government, who implemented Nazi-style ethnic cleansing in Ukraine during World War II, and who then went on to head the OUNB. Another interesting development here, also from Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty from June 14th of 2018, also by Christopher Miller. Ukrainian militia behind brutal Romani attacks getting state funds. Amid a recent wave of far-right attacks against minority groups, human rights activists have questioned how Ukrainian police could stand and watch the violence and destruction unfold. I think we've already answered that. Basically, the militias have police powers, and the head of the Ukrainian police directorate, Vadim Troyan, was the former commanding officer of the Azov Battalion. Continuing, but it seems they may now have an explanation. Some of the groups involved received financial support from the Ukrainian government. Combat 14, or C-14, a group whose members have openly expressed neo-Nazi views and have been involved in the recent violent attacks on Romani camps in Kiev, and the far-right-affiliated Svoboda political party are the recipients of youth and sports ministry grants for, quote, national patriotic education projects, unquote, according to a June 13th report by Hromadske Radio. The report's information comes directly from a video that the Youth and Sports Ministry published itself on YouTube on June 8th that shows its officials voting unanimously to fund the organizations. that these far-right extremist groups have been awarded grants from the Ukrainian government is likely to be of great concern to Kiev's Western backers and leading international human rights organizations, four of which published an open letter to authorities on June 14th, decrying what they called a sharp spike in political violence from these groups, who they say pose a great danger to Ukrainian society, Ukrainian democracy. In a statement published on its website, the Youth and Sports Ministry said it does not directly finance any public groups, including far-right ones, but it does finance the projects of these groups. Now, there is a bit of newspeak for you. They don't finance the groups, but they do finance the groups' projects. Those groups, continuing, three far-right groups won a youth and sports ministry competition for, quote, national patriotic education projects, unquote, funded with taxpayer money. The Educational Assembly, founded by C-14 head Yevon Karas, Combat 14 SICH, S-I-C-H, founded by Volodymyr Karas, who shares the same patronymic surname and address as the Combat 14 head, and Holosiev Hideout, whose founders include several members of the Svoboda political party. And then talks about the amounts of money given to these organizations, such as the SICH Children's Summer Camp, which will receive 440,000 hryvnia, about 16,900, and others. One wonders if the funding of these youth camps, and the Azov Battalion, by the way, as we have covered in previous programs, runs its own youth camp. One wonders whether that has anything to do with the following. From the BBC of June 24th of 2018, Roma camp attack leaves one dead. One person has been killed in an attack on a Roma camp in western Ukraine late on Saturday night. A masked group armed with batons and other weapons targeted the camp on the outskirts of Lvov shortly before midnight, according to police. A 24-year-old man died of stab wounds, while four others, including a 10-year-old boy, were injured. Seven suspects, aged 16 and 17, have been arrested, as well as a 20-year-old accused of planning the attack. I think it is reasonable to ask whether some of these irrepressible youths may have been either directly financed or indoctrinated by some of the youth groups that got money from the Youth and Sports Ministry of Ukraine, or whether they were perhaps simply inspired by the heroic activities of the Ruzhina Militia and Combat 14. Food for thought and grounds for further research.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
There was a case that, if not dominated the news, certainly assumed a prominent position in the news shortly before the World Cup opened in Russia. And that was initially the assassination of an anti-Kremlin journalist in Ukraine called Arkady, A-R-K-A-D-Y, Babchenko, B-A-B-C-H-E-N-K-O. It later turned out that the assassination was faked. And as more information came out, it even relatively mainstream media, including some that have been openly apologetic for the OUNB successor organizations, again, like Azov, like Sloboda Pravi Sector and others, such as the New York Times, have smelled something funny about this, although they haven't come right out and said, yep, this stinks, and this may have been a provocation or perhaps a setup for the intimidation of Ukrainian journalists who are critical of the Ukrainian government, and there are many of those journalists and also many citizens in Ukraine who do not like the OUND successor organizations that are in power. Exactly how many of those critics remains to be seen, because there has been active suppression of that criticism and intimidation and occasional violence against those who have expressed that opposition or that criticism journalistically. From the New York Times of June 1st of 2018, an article by Neil McFarquhar, M-A-C, capital F-A-R-Q-U-H-A-R, one of the worst of the New York Times writers about Ukraine, someone whose work comparatively rarely transcends propaganda. But even McFarquhar couldn't completely overlook how strange this was. The title of the article, "After the Faked Journalist Killing in Ukraine, the Murk Deepens." The strange cast of characters emerging in the faked assassination of a prominent Putin critic, including a Russian-hating right-wing priest and the director of a Ukrainian arms manufacturer, set the already bizarre case on a path to a murky, up-is-down mess of the sort that Ukraine seems to specialize in. Both the priest and the executive claim to be working for Ukraine's intelligence services. Ukrainian officials at first denied that, but in the case of the priest, subsequently reversed themselves and admitted he had played a role. Skipping down. Oleksiy Symbalyuk, O-L-E-K-S-I-Y-T-S-I-M-B-A-L-Y-U-K, once a monk and a deacon in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church who used the clerical name Aristarch, wrote on his Facebook page that he was the man who went to the authorities after being hired to kill Mr. Babchenko. Pictures on his Facebook page show him in green combat fatigues, including a patch from the Right Sector, or Pravi Sector, a Ukrainian ultra-nationalist organization that some, no, so this is Neil McFarquhar here, that some, particularly the Kremlin, portray as a neo-Nazi group. That's like saying Adolf Hitler, whom some, particularly the Kremlin, portray as a Nazi. I mean, that's what they are. They're Nazis, and they're proud of it. In this same Facebook page, although Mr. McFarquhar does not mention this, Mr. Symbalyuk is giving the Nazi salute in the picture. Okay, that will be in the written description for this program. Some, particularly the Kremlin, portray as a neo-Nazi group. Hell's bells, the guy's flashing the Nazi salute on his Facebook page, which Mr. McFarquhar must know about, and yet some, particularly the Kremlin, he writes, portray as a neo-Nazi group. Well, Mr. Symbalyuk is not posing for an antiperspirant or auditioning for an antiperspirant commercial in that Facebook post. However, McFarquhar does return to a semblance of sanity here. Given such strong and publicly avowed enmity toward Russia, it is odd, to say the least, that Mr. Symbalyuk would be selected to carry out the contract killing of a prominent Kremlin critic. When he first posted the information on Facebook, a spokeswoman for the Security Service of Ukraine, known by its initials SBU, denied that he was involved, but she later acknowledged that he had been. Then there is the accused organizer, who Ukrainian officials said was just warming up with the killing of Mr. Babchenko, and have a list of some 30 others Moscow supposedly wanted to eliminate. The man Boris L. Herman was arraigned in a Kiev court on Thursday night and ordered to be held in custody for 2 months, skipping down. Mr. Herman's lawyer, Eugene Solubko, S-O-L-O-B-K-O, wrote on Facebook that his client was the executive director of Schmeisser, S-C-H-M-E-I-S-S-E-R, a Ukrainian-German joint venture and the only arms manufacturer in Ukraine not owned by the government. It specializes in manufacturing sights for sniper rifles, he wrote. Well, that the alleged organizer of this plot will be the executive director of a German-Ukrainian arms manufacturer named Schmeisser, by the way. That it was also the name of a famous machine pistol that was used by the German infantry in the Second World War. It is described here as specializing in manufacturing sites for sniper rifles. It also raises idle question number 217. Might Schmeisser have been in any way involved with the arming of some of the snipers who played an important role in the Maidan coup? More about Mr. Tsymbaliuk. This from the UNIAN, capital U, all in capitals, UNIAN.info blog of June 1st of 2018. Babchenko's hitman reveals identity, Orthodox monk, Right Sector member, Donbass war veteran. He is a member of the Right Sector organization, which is outlawed in Russia. Hitman, who was hired to assassinate Russian journalist and Kremlin critic Arkady Babchenko in Ukraine, has revealed his identity. Alexei Tsymbaliuk is a former Orthodox Church monk, a Right Sector member, a volunteer, and a Donbass war veteran. Tsymbaliuk explained his decision by the fact that after tapes with his voice, which was not disguised, were made public, he saw no point in, quote, holding up, unquote. Skipping down, he said he would not give any interviews in the near future as long as the investigation is underway. Besides, he signed a non-disclosure agreement. In past programs, including For the Record 947, we have talked about the fact that Valentin Lavrychenko, the former head of the SBU, the Ukrainian Intelligence Service, was very close to Dmytro Yarosh, the head of Pravi Sektor, and used Pravi Sektor in some of the military operations in the civil war in eastern Ukraine. Also, the SBU, the Ukrainian intelligence officer in charge of the, quote, investigation, unquote, of the shootdown of MH17, Malaysian Airlines Flight 17, wrote on his Facebook post that the Jews of Ukraine should be exterminated, which I think suggests a strong Nazi/OUNB affiliation on his part as well. Do note again that the SBU has strong historical operational links with people of the OUNB/Pravi Sektor persuasion. Another murky link here concerns the alleged purchase of some 300 assault rifles and explosives, alleged to have been part of a Russian plot to launch terrorism in Ukraine. However, one of the things that we spoke about in For the Record 993 was the fact that a far-right-wing Ukrainian war hero, Nadia Savchenko, S-A-V-C-H-E-N-K-O, was alleged by Ukrainian authorities to be plotting a terrorist attack on Ukraine's parliament. This was right about the time that the Ukrainian intelligence service got its intelligence about the, supposedly got the intelligence about this new Moscow-directed assassination slash terror plot. One wonders whether this is something of a misdirection here, blaming the interdicted Nadia Savchenko far-right slash Ukrainian fascist plot on Moscow. Article about this in The Guardian of May 30th of 2018 by Luke Harding and Andrew Roth. Arkady Babchenko reveals he faked his death to thwart Moscow plot. Skipping down. Details of the precise threat to Babchenko's life were murky. Vasil Hristak, the head of the SBU, said Russia's spy agencies had contacted a middleman identified only as G and paid him $40,000 to arrange the murder. The middleman, in turn, approached a former Ukrainian volunteer soldier to carry out the hit, together with additional, quote, terrorist acts, he said. The middleman, now in custody, Hristak said, showing video of middle-aged white-haired man being bundled by officers into a van. Hristek added that the phone intercepts had revealed his contacts in Moscow. Dozens of contract killings had been averted, he suggested, claiming that the list of potential victims in Ukraine stretched to 30 names. The Ukrainian suspect was supposed to buy a large quantity of weapons and explosives, including 300 AK-47 rifles and hundreds of kilos of explosives, Hristak alleged. One of the interesting things, aside from the fact that the middleman appears to have been the executive director of a joint German-Ukrainian weapons manufacturer named after a famous machine pistol used by the German army in World War II, and a Pravi Sektor Hitler-saluting fellow named Symbaliuk, is that when the list of journalists who had been targeted, allegedly by the Kremlin, came out, it turned out that many of the people on that list were actually journalists who had been very critical of the Ukrainian government, and many of those journalists were openly skeptical about the veracity that the Kremlin had targeted them and suggested that, in fact, this was an attempt by the Ukrainian far right and the Ukrainian intelligence services to openly intimidate journalists in Ukraine from criticizing the government. One wonders if perhaps the killing of journalists or the terrorizing of journalists, either in the past or now in the future, will be blamed on the Kremlin. One of the things I have been warning about for a long time is the possibility that the OUMB successor organizations in Ukraine, given their primacy within the Ukrainian national security establishment and the police the police and the Ukrainian military, they would be in a good position to establish provocations. And that, given the nuclear capabilities of Russia, could conceivably lead to a third world war.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Once again, from Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty, this from June 6th of 2018, also by Christopher Miller. In Ukraine, prominent journalists targeted by Russian hit list question its authenticity. And the skipping down. The quote, hit list, unquote, caused worry and confusion for many journalists as they openly doubted the authenticity of a document that has been variously described in such a short period of time. Dmytro Knop, GNAP, a journalist for independent Romovsky TV's Slidstvo Info Investigative Unit, who is not among those on the list, seemed to doubt its veracity in a post on Facebook, asking sarcastically how the number of people on the list seemed to, quote, multiply before my eyes, unquote. Others also doubted its provenance, saying they found the makeup of it odd since so many people on the list were critics of the Ukrainian authorities. Alexei Oleksiy, Bratushak, Bratushak, a journalist for the independent Ukrainskaya Pravda news site, wondered whether this signaled an attempt by Ukraine's intelligence services to control, quote, all the movements, all the meetings of its critics ahead of elections. Reached by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty on June 4th, three journalists on the list who spoke on the condition that their names be withheld due to the potential threat to their lives and because the SBU had them sign a non-disclosure agreement, Pravi Sektor hitman Symbaliuk also signed one, said they doubted the authenticity of the list for a number of reasons. Skipping down. Journalists in Ukraine have long faced harassment, intimidation, doxing, and physical attacks, some of which have come from authorities. So again, is this list an attempt at basically framing journalists who might be intimidated and or killed as a Russian operation? That does not seem unreasonable, and certainly it appears that some of the names on the list have come to exactly that same conclusion. What we're going to do next is to examine some of the fallout from the rewriting of history in Ukraine. One of the things that we had noted in various programs, including For the Record 907. We talked about it in For the Record 781, and that is the Institute for National Memory. That is an organization headed up by a fellow named Volodymyr Vyatrovich. This was originally set up under the Yushchenko government following the Orange Revolution. Viktor Yushchenko put many of the same OUNB successor elements in power in Ukraine. Indeed, he was married to a woman named Ekaterina Chumachenko, who then became Ekaterina Yushchenko. She was a UCCA functionary that, again, the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America, the top OUNB front organization in the U.S. And she became Ronald Reagan's deputy director of public liaison and then married Viktor Yushchenko. Vyatrovich was placed in charge of reorganizing the files of the SBU, that was the Ukrainian Intelligence Service, and the aforementioned Valentin Malavichenko, very close to Pravi Sektor and the other OUNB organizations, who, as we looked at in For the Record 947, reorganized the Ukrainian Intelligence Service along the lines of the OUNB. He was made head of SBU under Yushchenko. The Institute for Historical Memory is completely rewriting the history of World War II in Ukraine and elsewhere, really standing it on its head. The OUNB are being made out to be anti-Nazi partisans and people who save Jews and other things. And the role of the UPA and the various military organizations derived from the OUNB, such as the 14th Waffen-SS Division, the Galician Division, are basically not only being whitewashed, but completely stood on their heads. They're being made out to be heroes who save Jews and otherwise conducting themselves in a laudatory fashion. The Institute for Historical Memory has been criticized vehemently by many of the Ukrainian, many members of the Ukrainian journalistic community. Who knows, some of them may be the people on the lists that were being drawn up, allegedly to be killed by Russia, but who knows, perhaps to be intimidated by the SBU. The Ukrainian Educational Ministry is also very close to the Institute for National Memory. Ukraine passed a law in 2015 making it illegal, basically, to tell the truth about World War II in Ukraine. It is now a crime in Ukraine to say anything critical about the OUNB, which was an open Nazi collaborationist organization in Ukraine. One cannot also criticize the UPA, the Ukrainian Partisan Army, that was the military wing of the OUNB, headed up by a fellow named Roman Shukevich. The UPA staffed many Nazi military formations and paramilitary police formations in Ukraine, such as the Naftigal Group or Nightingale Group that carried out the liquidation of much of the Jewish population of Lvov in western Ukraine, and that also staffed many of the Schutzmann shop. Those were some of the Ukrainian auxiliary police who were very much involved in atrocities against Polish nationals and Jews and Russian nationals and communists in Ukraine. We covered in the For the Record, I believe it was also 947, we covered the establishment of a festival called Shukevyet Fest in Lvov. This celebrates the entire persona, the career of Roman Shukevyet, whose son, by the way, is the head of UNSO, that is the successor organization to the UPA. The Shukevyet Fest, which again celebrates Roman Shukevyet, is on the anniversary of the beginning of the liquidation of the Ukrainian, of the Jewish population of Lvov. The political officer in charge of the Naftigal group was Peodor Oberlander, a key SS officer who had much to do with crafting the use of various ethnic groups, including the OUNB and other Eastern European fascist groups, as well as some of the various Muslim nationalities. It was Oberlander who had much to do with the crafting of the use of these various groups as Nazi combatants after the Third Reich's military losses on the Eastern Front began escalating, particularly after the Battle of Stalingrad. Oberlander became a key element. He was actually the Minister of Expellee for the West German government and had to resign because of his role with the Naftigal Group as the political officer for the Naftigal Group in the liquidation of the Jewish community of Lvov. Again, Roman Shukevyet, who was the actual commander, not the political officer, that was Oberlander, but who oversaw the Naftigal Group, is celebrated in a festival named after him, which occurs on the day that Shukevyet began that pogrom. It also is also the birthday of David Lane, the Nazi member of the Order, the American Nazi group that killed Alan Berg, whose 14 words are celebrated by Combat 14. And David Lane is a hero in Ukraine as well. These are some of the ways in which the actual Ukrainian establishment is completely standing World War II history on its head. And I think the serpent's walk scenario that I have discussed for many years will become a reality not only in Ukraine, but I think worldwide as well. I suspect that within 200 years or so, Hitler's birthday will be an international holiday. If you think I'm wrong, we'll just take a look at what's going on in Ukraine and how few elements in the U.S. are really willing to say what is going on, or really not just the U.S., but elsewhere as well.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
A fellow named Anatoly Matios, M-A-T-I-O-S, who is the chief military prosecutor in Ukraine, made a statement reported in Newsweek magazine that Jews were always basically financing key wars. This basically is something that Well, it is a standard feature of Nazi propaganda, and it is a type of statement that is being echoed throughout Ukraine. This by Christina Meza, M-A-Z-A, from Newsweek of June 27th of 2018. Jews want to drown Ukraine in blood, Ukraine's military prosecutor says, amid wave of racist and anti-Semitic attacks. This by Christina Meza, again from Newsweek. In an extensive interview with the Ukrainian news outlet Insider, Anatoly, A-N-A-T-O-L-I-Y, Matios, capital M-A-T-I-O-S, Ukraine's chief military prosecutor, espoused anti-Semitic conspiracy theories in which he implied that Jews want to drown ethnic Slavs in blood. Referring to Alexander Parvus, P-A-R-V-U-S, a Belarusian-born Marxist theoretician who was active in Germany's Social Democratic Party in the late 19th century and who also happened to be Jewish, Matthias claimed that Jews can be found financing all great conflicts. In each war, there was always a Parvus who brought men and money for a revolution which flooded Slavs with blood for decades. Parvus was also Jewish. In this case, they want to do the same to Ukraine, Matthias told the Insider. Again, this isn't just some ripe piece of fruit. This is Ukraine's chief military prosecutor, very much involved with handing down judgments on some of the investigations unfolding in Ukraine. Again, I noted the profound presence of Nazi elements and fascist elements in the Ukrainian national security establishment. Anatoly Matthios is Ukraine's chief military prosecutor, holding forth, as you just saw. We're going to be taking a look at a statement by a mayor from the Ukrainian town of Skole, S-K-O-L-E. Before that, however, from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency of May 15th of 2018, Ukrainian mayor and diplomat caught engaging in anti-Semitic rhetoric, skipping down. Separately, screenshots shared online show that Vasil Mereshinets, who works at Ukraine's consulate in Hamburg, Germany, blamed on Facebook Jews for World War II and saying death to the anti-fascists on his private Facebook page, which is reported Monday. And again, this is a consulate employee for Ukraine in Hamburg. Once more, one more time. Separately, screenshots shared online show that Vasil Mereshinets, M-A-R-U-S-H-C-H-Y-M-E-T-S, who works at Ukraine's consulate in Hamburg, Germany, blamed on Facebook Jews for World War II and saying death to the anti-fascists on his private Facebook page, Reuters reported Monday. And in a reference to the lustration laws that I alluded to earlier, in 2015, the Ukrainian parliament passed a law that criminalizes denying the, quote, heroism, unquote, of some of these allies of Nazi Germany, which oversaw the near annihilation of the region's Jews. In other words, if you say something honest about the OUNB, which basically was the primary Nazi collaborationist group in Ukraine, or that the UPA helped to staff the Galician Division and the Ukrainian Schutzmannschaft and the Nakhdagal Battalion and talk about what they actually did, you could be prosecuted in Ukraine. And Ukraine's chief military prosecutor is Anatoly Matthios, who made that statement about Jews always being involved with financing wars and trying to drown Slavs in blood. It is altogether Orwellian. Now, there is a town in in Ukraine called Skole, S-K-O-L-E. And the mayor of that town made the kinds of anti-Semitic statements that are more or less de rigueur for Nazis and fascists of all stripes and have been for a long time. And linking his statements with long-standing notions of an international Jewish conspiracy being behind communism and all kinds of things. What is noteworthy about this, because it really is not in and of itself particularly remarkable, and again, this is a mayor of a small town, when you get someone like the aforementioned Anatoly Matyos making these kinds of statements. He is Ukraine's chief military prosecutor. That is worth noting. But the thing about the mayor of Skole and his statements is that he was openly citing the Ukrainian Institute of National Memory, headed up by Volodymyr Vyacholich, as the documentary source for what he is saying. From the Defending History blog of May 17th of 2018. Example from Ukraine. East European Holocaust revisionism feeds directly into blatant anti-Semitism, unquote. Evidence continues to mount that the notorious far-right state-supported memory politics of Volodymyr Vyacholich's Ukrainian Institute of National Memory are directly leading to growing anti-Semitism in Ukraine. The mayor of a town in western Ukraine says the current government is a Muscovite Yid. What's striking is how he cites how Vyacholich's Institute to embolden and legitimize his views. Quote, from historical information, and now Vladimir Vyacholich revealing historically truthful documents, we know when the Bolsheviks came to power, from 70 to 95% of them were Jews who destroyed the Ukrainian nation and its peoples, unquote. The full video has added to the picture provided by various recent quotes from the mayor in public venues, quote, the performance of the Moscow Jewish authorities is dragging on for 4 years, unquote. For 4 years, again quoting, for 4 years, the performance is not Ukrainian government, but, say it correctly, the Moscow Jewish authorities, unquote. The mayor also asserts that he analyzed the, quote, extract from the Kabbalah and the Torah, unquote, in the book of Pavel Stepanov, Mafia and Ukraine, and came to the conclusion that Jewish children are taught from childhood to recognize the enemy and how to destroy him. Quote, by the way, a lot of that work is devoted to the deaths of the Goyim. They consider anyone except the Jews to be Goyim. All of them, Christians, Arabs, Buddhists, they are not people. They are not people for them. After their coming to world domination, because they are clearly heading for this, they form the policy of cosmopolitanism and liberalism to destroy all nations, to leave the political nation mixed up in a heap with migrations, with blacks, unquote, the mayor said. He added that world Jewry, unquote, provided Joseph Stalin with a victory in World War II, and admiringly noted that the American industrialist Henry Ford once called for, quote, isolating the 50 richest Jews, unquote, so there would be no more wars. Commenting on the ethics of his statements, the mayor said, who did I offend? I just told the truth, unquote. Moscow, that's the fellow who said this, Moscow has been the mayor of Skole since 2010. Judging by the poster behind the mayor's back, he uttered his monologue at the conference of the Donsov Scientific and Ideological Center. For those familiar with the 1930s in this part of the world, Dmytro Donsov, D-M-Y-T-R-O, DONPSOV, was a chief theorist behind the development of Ukrainian integral nationalism, kind of a fancy way of saying fascism, which formed a theoretical basis for OUN-UPA, a World War II-era ultra-nationalist organization which engaged in mass murder, in the mass murder of hundreds of thousands of Jewish and Polish civilians in its quest to build an ethnically pure Ukrainian state. Well, again, although Moscow himself would appear to be a minor figure, the fact that you have a Ukrainian ministry, the Volodymyr Vyatrovich headed Institute for National Memory, churning out this sort of thing, as we looked at in For the Record 907, the Minister of Education in Ukraine is sympathetic to the same kind of thing. When you have a law in Ukraine, as there is, which basically can prosecute anyone who tells the truth about the Nazi affiliations of and collaboration with the Third Reich of the OUN, well, basically the OUNB and the UPA's affiliation with and collaboration with the Third Reich, you can be charged with a crime. And when you have Roman Shukevich being feted in a Shukevich fest on the anniversary of the beginning of the liquidation of the Jewish population of Lvov, that isn't Holocaust denial, that is Holocaust celebration. I would note that Henry Ford's anti-Semitism and his influence on Adolf Hitler, which was profound, is discussed in a miscellaneous archive show M11, that is Uncle Sam and the Swastika, done all the way back in May of 1980, U.S. industrial cooperation with Nazi Germany. It also is discussed in For the Record 511. Henry Ford's financing of domestic fascist groups in the Detroit area and in Michigan is discussed in For the Record 448. We noted some of the anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, which in turn merged with eugenics and with anti-immigrant sentiment in the U.S. in the 1930s. We talked about that with Peter Lavenda in For the Record 838, and we reprise some of that in our most recent program, For the Record 1013, Fascism and the Politics of Immigration. That type of anti-Semitic conspiracy theory, which again fused with pro-eugenics, anti-communist and anti-immigration sentiment in the way that Peter Lavenda detailed in his book, The Hitler Legacy, and in our conversations with him, figures prominently in Mayor Moscow's regurgitation of that type of anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. And again, although there are many people in Ukraine who do not agree with this, perhaps most of them do not. There is no way of knowing for sure. There certainly are many who do agree. And with the position of many of these OUNB successor organizations, Pravi Sektor Svoboda, the Azov Battalion, the Combat 14 Militia, the National Druzhina Militia, and with people like Mr. Matyos, the chief military prosecutor in Ukraine, with Volodymyr Vyatrovich and the Institute for National Memory, with the Lvov authorities commissioning the Shukevich Fest. And again, the lustration laws, I should say, make it illegal in Ukraine to tell the truth about World War II and what happened in Ukraine. There is reason to be concerned, and I think those journalists who found their names on the alleged Russian hit list conspiracy, their anxieties about that actually having been a vehicle for intimidating criticism of the Ukrainian authorities by the SBU and related elements, I think their fears are well-founded. Again, bear in mind that Valentin Novavichenko, the former head of the SBU, was very, very close indeed to Pravisektor. This concludes For the Record program number 1014, Update on Fascism in Ukraine. This is being recorded on July 10th of the year 2018. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.